Good morning, 14th of April, 2024. You might be aware some big news broke internationally last night in the geopolitical realm. So today, when you go to Mass, maybe say some prayers for peace, that the current situation over in the land of our Lord's birth would be resolved quickly before it spirals out of control. Those are my only thoughts on that conflict. I don't generally talk geopolitics here. This is not the purpose of this channel. If it starts to involve the church, you know, we'll have to cover it. But beyond that, let's stick to our news of the day. And I actually want to start with something from Cardinal Burke. So we're going to go talk. We're going to talk here. Some of you mentioned this in my comments yesterday, I think, which is that Cardinal Burke had the kind of take that probably will get him in trouble. So from LifeSite, we get this headline. Let's make sure we're here. Cardinal Burke, Pope Francis, Latin Mass restrictions have had exactly the opposite effect. Cardinal Burke, who regularly celebrates a Latin Mass, said that congregations at traditional liturgies are, quote, getting bigger and bigger with people of all ages, including young families with many children. I mean, is anybody who's watching this surprised that we've had this kind of reaction from the laity to Traditionis Custodis and its follow-up document? Nobody here should be surprised by this in the slightest, because they made it sort of they made the traditional Mass almost like a forbidden fruit kind of situation, which I don't like using that as an analogy, but it's true. I mean, you take a pope who's very unpopular among those curious about the Latin Mass, have him make an absurd decree that even the secular media criticize him for, because they did, as I reported in the days afterwards. And what's the result of all of it? The perfect recipe for something becoming a sort of a forbidden fruit. You remember when you were a kid, your parents all told us not to do certain things. And oftentimes they're telling us not to do those things made us actually more likely to do those things. Some of them, you know, might have, you know, tobacco might be one of those things, or whatever music your parents told us not to listen to, or simply not going to certain parts of town, whatever it was. You end up making you more likely to want to do it. Everybody's got their thing. And in a weird way, this has been the effect, because you have Francis, who is increasingly unpopular in places where the traditional Mass is popular. And so when he comes out against something, people almost want to see if what he's coming out against is good, unless it's an obvious thing, like in his more recent document. Raven Ray says the SSPX High Mass at his local chapel is full, and even the low Mass is of respectable attendance. That's exactly what my FSSP parish is like. The other FSSP parish in Oklahoma is like that, and the SSPX chapel in Oklahoma is like that as well. So, again, he came out against it, and more people wanted access to it. Don't be surprised. Let's take a look at what Cardinal Burke has to say on the matter, though, before we go to the main event of our day. So, quote, Cardinal Raymond Burke has noted that despite Pope Francis's restrictions on the traditional liturgy, attendance at the old rite is, quote, getting bigger and bigger, as the rite is integral to the life of the church. This form of the Roman rite has been an extraordinary blessing through so many centuries, said the American cardinal about the traditional liturgy, otherwise known as the Latin Mass or Usus Antiquor. He noted that per Traditionis Custodis, issued by Pope Francis in July of 2021, celebration of the Latin Mass has become more and more difficult due to the new legislation in this matter. The restriction, said Cardinal Burke, makes so many difficulties for the celebration according to the Usus Antiquor, according to the older use of the Roman Rite. Speaking to Italian group Fide de Cultura during Easter week, 75-year-old prelate commented widely about the enduring attraction the traditional Mass has for Catholics of all ages, despite the papal restrictions. From what I see, he stated, directly visiting various parts of the world, also from what I hear, this liturgy, this form of the sacred liturgy, with all its beauty and with its way of reflecting the richness, the profundity of our faith, continues to attract, as it is easy and understandable for so many people. Cardinal Burke, who regularly and publicly celebrates the traditional liturgy, along with offering ordinations in it for traditional priestly societies, added that the size of congregations of the ancient liturgy is continually growing. The congregations, in fact, and the apostolates for the celebration of the traditional liturgy, as we say, are getting bigger and bigger. They are a congregation of people of all ages, but what is quite impressive is the number of young families with lots of children, and also the young people, not the married ones, the ones who are looking. And quote. So not only has it had the opposite of the intended effect, it's had the opposite of the intended effect with the group you would want least likely to seek it out if you were trying to bury it forever. Young people, especially those who with families and children. So there you go. Sunny Jim says, it's like telling a kid they can't have something. As soon as you do, they immediately want it. And that, there's definitely some of that to it. Or at least in a more, maybe more mature way of saying, maybe I should go check this thing out since it's so apparently Francis doesn't like it. MacP says, true statement, definitely backfired. If anything, Pope Francis' restrictions towards the TLM gave the mass more attention. What goes around comes around. Yeah. Small Rail says, the SSPX Priory Church and headquarters in New Zealand is now too small. Well over 600 in parish, 3 grand full masses every Sunday. Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful news. So that's what the consequences are, have been for Francis, for Traditionis Custodis. In fact, if the next Pope comes in and undoes Traditionis Custodis, then the result will be that there'll be more people used to going to the traditional mass. And then you're going to see it spread and become more popular. That would be ironic. Well, let's go to our news story. So I brought to you the happenings with Father Jesus Maria Mizibego. He's a priest from Africa who has been essentially canceled. He was an Opus Dei priest, kicked out of Opus Dei, and has had his priestly faculties taken from him because he criticized Francis. And so he's got a new letter, and it's Sunday. I try to reserve some of these for Sundays, where he talks about how priests and bishops, this is an open challenge to them, that they have to correct Francis, that they have to, for the sake of Francis's soul, have to correct him on the heresies and errors that he promulgates before it's too late. Now, before we get to that letter, I'm going to bring to you Archbishop Vigano, although it does, I should remind people, before I forget, thanks to the listener who started the Give, Send, Go. We're about not quite 75% of the way there. So I will put a link in the live chat and I'll put a link at the comment section. So for those who might be interested in helping out, it's related to my wife and I having our fourth child and chaos ensuing afterwards, as it might be. Trying to be a little more careful here. So back to the story though. So Father Mizibedo, and you might be wondering, why is Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano in Italian on my screen? Well, because Vigano chimed in on this, and he's got some good observations about this letter before we get to the letter itself. So if you don't know, on Twitter, there's always a translation option for tweets that show up that show up from accounts that you follow that are not in your language, and you can translate it, and it does okay. It's done by Google. It does a serviceable job. So here's what Archbishop Vigano had to say. Quote, the open letter of Father Janvier Gimnau, that's the actual name of the priest, the Mizibedo is his pen name, shamefully expelled from Opus Dei and dismissed from the clerical state due to his loyalty to the Catholic magisterium and his open opposition to the apostasy of the Bergoglian sect, may at first glance appear naive and useless. I myself, in reading the list, however partial, of Bergoglio's deviations and heresies, asked myself what use it could be to turn to the cardinals and bishops of the orb, to whom I myself have launched an appeal several times, to ask a public correction of a manifest apostate. Let's pause. Vigano is calling Francis a manifest apostate, meaning it's obvious that Francis has left the faith, according to Archbishop Vigano. With a supernatural gaze, we understand how true and timely the words of our Lord are. I tell you, if these are silent, the stones will cry out. See Luke chapter 19, verse 40. The cardinals are silent. The bishops are silent. The clergy and the people are silent. The accomplices of apostasy and sins of the flesh are silent, but also those who find themselves under blackmail or threat because they owe their legitimacy to the arbitrariness of a usurper whom they also recognize as Pope. Those who denounce the effects of the crisis but do not want to recognize them are silent. The causes which they are guilty share, starting with Vatican II and its heretical liturgy. Okay, so let's pause again. Vigano has shifted more. Remember, it was 2 months ago, 3 months ago, something like that, where Vigano was an invited speaker at Dr. Ed Mazza's conference on the Benedict is the true Pope question. And Vigano ended his address by saying that actually none of us have the authority to declare Francis isn't actually Pope, that that will have to be done by the future magisterium, but it's good to keep this discussion going. That was my reading of his address. This is a more of a shift now, I think, from that position. We shall see. Continuing though with him, even those who, for having defended Catholic truth, have been ostracized by the church for 50 years, but hope to be able to benefit from the exodus of faithful after the promulgation of Traditionis Custodis, are silent. Even that cardinal who came down from Valcamonica, who made the 2013 conclave invalid, is silent. That other cardinal, saved at the last minute from his own passing, thanks to the courageous interventions of Veronica, is also silent despite having confided the invalidity of the conclave to friends. Let's pause there. There have been a couple of cardinals who have anonymously come forward and admitted that there was politicking going on at the conclave. That was in direct violation of the decree of one of the decrees of John Paul II regarding how conclaves are run. And politicking at the conclave in the decree explicitly says it makes it illegitimate. It makes it invalid, meaning in theory that the person elected Pope at the conclave isn't actually so. I'd love to get some canonists to chime in on that, because how binding is that? I don't know. Let's continue with Vigano. Finally, the faithful remain silent, and not of cowardice or fear, but because they are scandalized and now disappointed by a hierarchy totally subservient to the enemy. The cry of Father Jesus Marie pierces the silence with the simplicity of the words of a child, the clarity of the voice of a true disciple of Christ. And this cry echoes in the desolate void of an afflicted church between the vaults of a deserted temple desecrated by its own ministers. It's up to the few who have remained faithful to shake themselves from their torpor, seeing in that desperate and suffered cry an appeal to restore to the bride of the land the dignity that was stripped from her by unworthy shepherds and mercenaries. Because this vox clamantis in desert could be a last appeal with which Providence calls his people together, with which he prepares the painful and severe purification of the wicked, with which he marks a point of no return before coming of Christ, like a thief in the night. To which the priest thanks Vigano for the sentiment, saying, "Thank you, Excellency, for your faith and courage. May God grant that all cardinals and bishops join you in making a public filial correction to Francis for the good of our church." That is what Vigano had to say about what you're about to hear from this priest. And Vigano seems to go back and forth on how spicy he tends to be. In this case, he was calling the new mass invalid and heretical and other such things. Peter Vigano has not been silent on the infiltration by the Stonecutters. He's written many letters in the last 6 years now, and I've covered virtually as many of them as I could, and he has touched on that subject before. It's not immediately relevant, I don't think, as opposed to Francis spewing all sorts of weird ideas. So let's go now to Father Jesus Marie. LifeSite picked up on this. He initially published the latest one on his Facebook page, which appears to be where he publishes most things. But this one is Open Laeter Jesus Vivit, addressed to Pope Francis and to the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops, concerning the truth about Pope Francis and his moral and doctrinal errors. Issued 7th of April 2024, Divine Mercy Sunday. Dearest Fathers, Jesus lives in the church and in the world. This means that the truth lives and remains eternal despite all the attempts to extinguish it in the hearts of women and men. Strangely enough, these attempts today come from the one whose special function is to protect the truth and its worldwide propagation, Pope Francis. Unfortunately, since 2016, despite all the filial corrections of his daughters and sons, he has refused to correct his many moral and doctrinal errors, which through relativism and situation ethics attack marriage, the family, and the sacraments. These errors have already spread widely among Christians and are even being taught to future priests in seminaries around the world. The impact in the short, medium, and long term is bound to be negative, since these errors will shape their thoughts and actions and gradually distance them from the perfect fulfillment of God's will in the church and in the world. Oh, dear fathers, could we say that the silence of the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops is complicit in the negative consequences produced by Francis's errors over the last 8 years? Many Christians, including myself, think that it is a meditative silence rather than one of complicity. They think the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops wanted to give themselves time to observe and analyze Francis's errors, and that they will react officially and publicly before he leaves this world. These Christians therefore nourish the hope that our cardinals and bishops will soon come to a collegial decision on all the Argentine Pope's errors, and an act of charity aimed at helping him to publicly acknowledge his errors and to ask God and the people of God for forgiveness. This is all the more necessary when we can already foresee that Francis's particular judgment will take into account the many scandals he has created, and the words of the Lord in the Old Testament and the New Testament that invite pastors of souls to great responsibility and serious conversion and penance in the case of grave error. We also remember that Canon 1752 of the Code of Canon Law said that, quote, the salvation of souls, which must always be the supreme law in the church, is to be kept before one's eyes, and that Canon 747 recalled the duty to preach the truth to them. Solus animatum suprema lex. Two actions are therefore absolutely necessary today for the salvation of souls, the good of Pope Francis and the good of the church. One, public and collegial filial correction. O dear fathers, as you know, Francis has sometimes been presented as the Pope of Mercy, since he has made mercy a key theme of his pontificate. And among the works of spiritual mercy is one that consists in bringing those who are mistaken out of error. On Divine Mercy Sunday, we cannot forget the cry of the Sacred and Merciful Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Mercy, mercy, mercy. Why, since 2016, has there been no filial public correction addressed by a coalition of cardinals and bishops to Pope Francis? Why the silence of the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops, which seems to set aside the Eighth Commandment to the Decalogue prohibiting the sin of adulation? Why have these colleges not yet followed Jesus' commandment to publicly correct obstinate errors? Why have these colleges not yet taken into account the commandment of God the Father, encouraging public correction for obstinate error? Why have these colleges not yet imitated the example of St. Paul, who out of love for the nascent church and for St. Peter, did not hesitate to make a public filial correction to the Prince of the Apostles? Let us note in passing that St. Peter's error was much less serious than the many errors of Francis, which attack marriage, the family, and the sacraments. Why have the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops still not fulfilled the instruction that Christian tradition, St. Augustine, and St. Thomas Aquinas have left us? If there were any danger to the faith, superiors would have been rebuked by inferiors, even in public. Two, courageous theological and canonical investigations. As an aside, this one is probably going to answer the first side and also cause a lot of people to be upset at the implication when they realize what's being applied here. O dear fathers, on January 1st, 2020, Our Lady of Angara said, dear children, my Jesus needs your public and courageous testimony. Many chosen to defend the truth will retreat out of fear. Then on April 8th, 2021, she added, my Jesus needs men and women of courage, so that following the example of John the Baptist, they may announce the gospel and defend his church. So there is no doubt that Jesus and Mary are counting on the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops to defend the truth of the church's traditional teaching, which Francis has distorted with his errors. Here it is very important to note the exceptional nature of these errors. O dear fathers, on September 5th, 2016, with the bishops of the pastoral region of Buenos Aires, Francis stated that, quote, the commitment to live in continence, chastity, is an option. When have we seen a pope make such a statement? Never. On December 10th, 2018, together with Cardinal Luis Francisco Ladaria Ferrer and Archbishop Giacomo Morandi, Francis accepted the practice of removal of functioning parts for begetting offspring, when the state of that part poses no present or future danger to the woman or who has marital relations, and when a group of self-appointed experts certify that all of her children will not survive the process of coming into the world. When we have seen a pope accept such a practice? Never. On December 21st, 2018, Francis said, quote, one is not born a saint, one becomes one, and this also applies to Our Lady. Whew, when have we seen a pope reject the original sanctity of Mary? Never. On February 4th, 2019, Francis declared that, quote, the pluralism and diversity of religions are a wise divine will. When have we seen a pope make such a declaration that attributes to God's positive will the existence of religions that practice evil or sin? Then he lists a whole bunch of them. Never. On October 21st, 2020, Francis told humanity that, quote, what we have to do is a civil coexistence law for James Martin pairings. When have we seen a pope make such a proposal to humanity? Never. On September 15th, 2021, Francis authorized all publicly pro-Moloch Catholic politicians to receive the Holy Eucharist without the need for them to reject their promotion of the Moloch ritual. When have we seen a pope give such authorization? Never. On December 18, 2023, Francis asked priests to carry out, quote, blessings for couples in irregular situations and for couples of the double S type. When have we seen a pope make such a request to priests? Never. Oh, dear fathers, all the above errors constitute a highly justified cause for many Christians to have doubts about the authenticity of Francis's pontificate. It would therefore be very useful if theological and canonical investigations were launched by the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops, so that the truth about Francis's pontificate can be revealed and Christians can finally enjoy peace and serenity in their church. Subsection A. Investigation on the conclave that gave us Francis. Was Pope Benedict XVI's resignation valid or invalid, taking into account the various unfavorable events that preceded it? And then they list a whole bunch of external things that no one takes all that seriously when they defend, when they dismiss those who have questions about this. This is the first question for which many Christians are waiting for an official answer from the church. The Saint question, second question is, did the group of cardinals known as the St. Gallen Group, or they use a more common name that Cardinal Godfrey Danneels called it, fraudulently have Francis made Pope? Third question, is the incident mentioned by an Italian journalist, Antonio Socci, in his book on the election of Francis decisive in rendering that process invalid? Socci found out about this incident from the Argentine journalist, Elisabetta Peak, who in turn received it from a cardinal of the conclave. This cardinal, after swearing before God and his brother cardinals to remain silent, betrayed his own word and the secrecy of the conclave by confiding in Peak. Some analysts believe that it was Francis himself, given his close friendship with the Argentine journalist. And B, investigation of Francis's heresies. My seven open letters, published in 2021, 2022, and 2023, presented and explained in detail Pope Francis's main errors. His heresies are material, words and actions, but his obstinacy in maintaining them since 2016 forces us to note that they are also formal, voluntary. His canonical infractions are numerous, as he has acted against a whole lot of codes of the subsections of the Code of Canon Law. According to Canons 1364, quote, a heretic incurs a laetae sententia excommunication if a longstanding contempt or the gravity of scandal calls for it, dismissal from the clerical state. For Canon 1365, a person who teaches a doctrine condemned by the Roman pontiff or by an ecumenical council or obstinately rejects the teaching mentioned in Canon 752, subsection 2, or Canon 752 is to be punished with a censure and deprivation of office. Who can dismiss Francis from the clerical state since he is officially pope? No one can. Can the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops choose a new pope when they see that for 8 years Francis has placed himself outside the communion of the church because of the many heresies he refuses to rectify? Francisco Suarez, one of the greatest theologians of the Society of Jesus, is totally in favor. Finally, let us consider Canon 1391. The following are to be punished: person who in public ecclesiastical document asserts something false. Pope Francis has affirmed the false in at least three public ecclesiastical documents. Amoris Laetitia on that issue, though you have to be careful talking about here, and Fiducius Supplicans. Does he not deserve to be punished, along with Cardinals Ladaria and Fernandez, Archbishop Morandi, and Father Matteo, since he has used several public ecclesiastical documents to affirm the false and seriously mislead all Christians? No one can punish Francis, but Ladaria, Fernandez, Morandi, and Matteo can be punished. C. Investigation on the application of the dogma of papal infallibility to Francis. According to the dogma of papal infallibility, no pope can teach the universal church a moral or doctrinal error when he speaks definitively as pastor and doctor of all Christians. Is there such an error in Francis's magisterium? Apparently, yes, the one of June 5, 2017, in relation to the post-synodal apostolic exhortation of Amoris Laetitia. In fact, on September 5, 2016, Archbishop Sergio Alfredo Finoy and the bishops of the pastoral region of Buenos Aires wrote a letter to Pope Francis on Amoris Laetitia. The letter contains the following three sentences. Commitment to live in continence can be proposed. Amoris Laetitia does not ignore the difficulties of this option. The mentioned option may not, in fact, be feasible. According to these three sentences, the commitment to live in continence, i.e. the virtue of chastity, is an option. But this is false and constitutes a heresy. What is surprising is that on the same day, September 5th, 2016, Pope Francis wrote a letter in response. I received the text of Buenos Aires Pastoral Region. The text is very good and thoroughly explains the meaning of chapter 8 of Amoris Laetitia. There are no other interpretations. And on the 5th of June, 2017, he formally ordered Cardinal Pietro Parolin to publish the Argentine bishop's letter and the papal response on the official Vatican website, stating that they constitute a magisterium authenticum, i.e. a true magisterium. All the conditions, therefore, seem to have been met for affirming that Francis presented his approval of the heresy of the Argentine bishops as an infallible teaching. 1. His desire to have this accepted by the Universal Church is evident from the publication on the website accessible to all Christians. 2. The definitive character is confirmed by his letter of reply, which states that no other interpretation is possible. 3. What he is asking to be accepted involves a moral error, which is even a heresy. And 4. He gave his order to Parolin as pastor and doctor of all Christians. D. Investigation on the possible membership of Francis to ecclesiastical stonecuttery. Is it legitimate to think that Pope Francis is a member of that group or is influenced by ecclesiastics who are members? The convergence between Francis's errors and the aspirations of that group is scientifically undeniable for any intellectually honest theologian who studies the idea of universal brotherhood united with relativistic mentality, situation ethics, and the primacy of individual conscience over the moral law. This characteristic of that idea set is perfectly reflected in the principal errors of Francis's magisterium, as can be seen in the detailed explanation of part 6 of my open letter, Maria Supplicans, which I brought to you right after this date, actually. A good question. Why, since 1999, has Francis been an honorary member of the Rotary Club, usually considered close to those groups, when the Church has expressly forbidden this to ecclesiastics since 1951? Third question. Why are the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops silent on the public statement by Ambassador Juan Bautista Yafre? Indeed, in a television show, La Mirada, by Roberto Garcia, he recalled that an Argentine television force station had published a telephone call in which the Vatican's head of intelligence in Argentina claimed that he and Francis are members of that organization. Fourth question, will the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops study the previous problems and note a possible excommunication of Pope Francis? Oh, dear brothers, with humility and respect, I end this letter by asking you three questions and begging your forgiveness for my insistence. Do you really love Pope Francis? Will you let him leave this world without making him a public filial correction? Will you collegially tell the truth to the people of God about the relativism and situation ethics introduced by Francis into the traditional teaching of the Church? With faith, we pray to the Sacred and Merciful Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary to give the College of Cardinals and the College of Bishops the strength to flee from hypocrisy, the courage to investigate the authenticity of Francis' pontificate, the charity to help him correct his errors, and the honesty to answer the legitimate questions the Christian people are asking about the magisterium of the 266th Pope of the Catholic Church. Your African son, Father Hanvia Gnau, pen name Father Jesus Maria Mizubeto. And then he has an email and all the rest of it there. How many of you were expecting that letter to go as far as he did? I'm very curious what you think about this. So please, please let me know. Vent says, remember, Francis also said that a grave sin is, quote, not that bad of a sin. Yeah, there are certain ones he has said that about. A lot of priests of his generation have said that, too. I suspect you're talking about what Pius XII called the private sin. Kiss our small ears around and our host don't like you talking about certain things of the flesh in any detail. But Peter Coleman says St. Francis's name should not be tainted by Bergoglio's choice of name. Yeah. But Peter Coleman, we remain this because of that infiltration. Of course, I mean, most people on our side of things understand this. But most people don't talk about it anymore because there's just so much going on. It's just hard to keep up with everything going on. Small Rail says, all the scandal and heresy must not lead one to apostasy. The devil works hard to make Catholics fall, especially priests. Most atheists are ignored by the devils as, that's true, as well as a lot of our separated brethren and others who functionally lead lives who are that are not Christian. Damon Keller says, at least priests are calling it the error. It seems like Vigano is the only one of the hierarchy standing up, as they all should, with the type of condemnation these errors rightly deserve. Yes, that's unfortunate, too. That's why I keep going back to Vigano. That's why I suspect you see this now concerted effort to discredit him going on among bishops and among laity. There's this very clear effort to discredit him, which is weird because Vigano is won't be around that much longer, right? I mean, they could, in theory, just wait him out. But they're trying to discredit him completely. All right, thanks very much for tuning in, folks. If there's any final thoughts, it's a Sunday morning. Got to get the family ready for Mass, as these things are. I'll remind you all again, once again, of the fundraiser thing, which we will put a link to. Once again, thanks to the viewer who started this, and to the those of you who have contributed. It is greatly appreciated, as always. And as I always say, pray for the church and pray for peace today, please, given everything going on in the world. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.